Big show for you here today. It is our divisional round recap. Scott Pianowski joins me to break down everything we saw from the divisional round weekend. But starting with big news out of Buffalo, Sean McDermott has been fired, but Brandon Bean is not just staying, he has been promoted. We deep dive on that before getting into the games. Bills, Broncos, Patriots over Texans, Seahawks demolish the Niners. What to make of the Rams-Bears game? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that here this morning is our guy, Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, brother?
Not much. I don't know how we're going to fill a show because there's just no storylines in the NFL these days, Matt. I don't know that this weekend was maybe as dramatic as the first weekend, but the games are more important, so that adds to it. We've had a great playoff run so far with moments we'll remember, second guessing, you know, controversy, and just another great NFL playoffs in full gear.
No doubt. Divisional round, it's always so great because the stakes are really high. I mean, not that the stakes are low in the wild card round, but the stakes are so high, usually you're able to weed out the riffraff of the wild card round. But this year, it didn't really feel that way necessarily because, as we've talked about constantly, the teams are so tight and the competition is so close. But that led to some really big games, some games that felt a little lopsided as well. But we'll get into all of that here as we discuss our recap from the divisional round of the playoffs, what mattered, what went down, what matters for the 2026 fantasy season, and everything in between. But we have to start with the big news of this morning. The Buffalo Bills have fired Sean McDermott after their loss in the divisional round to the Denver Broncos, which is going to be the first game that we talk about here, so we'll have a smooth transition into it. But McDermott is out after a 98-50 record over nine seasons with the Bills. Scott, the interesting thing here for me is, I mean, I'm curious what your thought about firing McDermott is, but the interesting thing here is that Brandon Bean, the Bills general manager, is not only keeping his job, he was actually promoted this morning. That is right. The Bills also gave Brandon Bean the title of president of football operations to go along with general manager, according to Adam Schefter. He will now oversee all facets of the organization. I think that is those two things have to be tied together here. So Scott, what was your reaction when you saw the McDermott news this morning?
Yeah, we were always wondering if they would clean house completely and, you know, start at the top. Bean survives, McDermott doesn't. This is kind of the theme of the NFL right now, is that being good, being competitive, being a player in the playoffs but not getting the Super Bowl isn't good enough. It wasn't good enough for Mike Tomlin, although he did step down. He wasn't fired. Obviously, the Ravens moved on from John Harbaugh, who's a very successful coach. He got hired right away. I wonder if Harbaugh would have had interest in the Buffalo job if he were still in the market. Yeah. But so it just shows the immediacy, the demand. We know the story in Buffalo, right? I mean, they have maybe the best player in the league in Josh Allen. He gives you a window. They've gone to the playoffs. Not only gone to the playoffs every year, but they're winning a game in the playoffs every year. This is so much like Dan Marino's run in Miami, where they weren't just a playoff team. They were going deep into the playoffs. And they're, Buffalo is collecting these losses that really, really sting. And it's not Josh Allen's fault. McDermott was a defensive coach. The defense collapsed to 20th in DVOA this year. A lot of that, of course, is injuries. It always is injuries in the NFL. But I think that's probably what hurt McDermott the most, is that he has a reputation as a defensive coach. That's where he hangs his hat. That's where he made his bones, why he got the job in the first place. And after some really good defenses in Buffalo a few years ago, it's gotten a little bit worse and a little bit worse. And you see these games they're losing, right? They score 30 against Denver and lose. They scored 29 their previous playoff loss, 24. There's a 36 in there. There's a 24 in there. I mean, you can't – I know Josh Allen was a little sloppy with the ball at times in Denver, but when you score 30 points, you're supposed to win. So the blame comes on the defense. The blame comes to McDermott. I worked for as long as I could trying to find the right coach for them. It's for a team that's close to winning, you would think to be an automatic, oh yeah, that guy. And I have a lot of candidates, and I'm curious what your list looks like. But I thought normally when a job like this opens up, like when the Buccaneers moved on from Tony Dungy, we all knew John Gruden was going to get that job. You know, a lot of times the handoff is really simple when the team is already a winning program. I'm not really sure where Buffalo goes from here.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about everything you just said. There are a lot of thoughts about this situation in general. And, you know, I said this last night on our Football 301 recap. I actually think if you're making the case to fire Sean McDermott based on the performance of the defense, I actually think this is the wrong year to make that case, because I think that the way the defense, specifically in the secondary, which is where McDermott cut his teeth as a defensive back kind of specialist, I always remember those Carolina defenses under him would just consistently outperform their talent. I think that the defense outperformed its talent this year, especially late in the year where they were doing a lot of like disguised coverages of something I talked about a lot with Joel on the preview show this week. I think McDermott actually did a great job there. But I also think that this idea, Scott, that we only judge head coaches off like their side of the ball has become so so small-minded in the NFL media space. It's like the guy is the head coach. He's not the head coach of the secondary. So I think that there was, to me, it's like I could have seen the justification for keeping McDermott. I could have seen moving on. But the only way it makes sense to move on from him is if you're also cleaning house in the front office. Because I think, Scott, the front office is more to blame for the weaknesses and the problems on this Buffalo Bills roster. Like, we're going to talk about Josh Allen's performance when we get to this game. And I think Allen, there's a big chunk of the blame that has to be laid at his feet for this playoff game. I mean, you turn the ball over four times, like, You got to slice off a big piece of the pie here in terms of the blame. But we can all recognize that the roster was not well set up from a pass catcher standpoint. Absolutely hilariously bad there. They kind of died as they lived on the failed Brandon Cooks catch there, in terms of this was the issue all season, was you're throwing a Brandon Cooks in the divisional round of the playoffs. That's crazy. But as I mentioned on the defense too, there are also pretty big weak spots that it never really felt like Brandon Bean had the pulse of what the roster needed at any given point. So I just think keeping him, not only is it, to me, borderline insane, I also think it informs what we do next from a head coaching standpoint. I threw out on Twitter this morning, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Joe Brady, an internal promotion. I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to the well with Brian Daboll, or as others have pointed out, Peter Schrager, chief among them, pointed out that like Davis Webb, the quarterback coach of the Denver Broncos, he's gotten head coaching interviews. He used to be the quarterback coach with the Buffalo Bills. And apparently him and Josh Allen are really tight, which I'm not so sure that's like a compelling point to me to make him your head coach, but it's something that people have thrown out there. So those are like three names off the cuff, offensive guys that I would consider to be potential Bills head coaching candidates this cycle, whether I think that's a good idea or not.
Yeah, some of the other names I was thinking about, Jesse Minter, well-regarded defensive mind. Brian, you mentioned Daboll, Clint Kubiak, who's done such a great job with the Seattle offense. At some point, Brian Flores is going to be a hot head coaching candidate. Again, maybe it's not in this cycle. Man, he had that Minnesota defense playing so well at the end of the year. They won, I think, five games in a row and were really just embarrassing other teams on offense. So I think Flores is a good coach. Obviously, he had a very odd run out in Miami. I'll hold that against him. I'd like to see him get another job. And you mentioned Josh Allen. I'm curious to see, does Allen have input here? I mean, it would be a mistake not to at least talk to him, but does Josh Allen steer it to his guy? Does he have a lot of clout in that area? I'm curious. And we all throw out the stats, right? I mean, Allen won the MVP in 2024. Mac Hollins led the team in touchdown catches with five. You look at their stat sheet this year, and it's like one player got over 600 yards receiving, and nobody had more than Khalil Shakir's 719 yards. That's how you support Josh Allen. Obviously, their season coming down to that critical Brandon Cooks play. Why is Brandon Cooks the guy that you're throwing that bet? I think Cooks had a perfectly fine effort on the play. He actually played pretty well the last few weeks. I'm not taking a cheap shot at him, but he needs to be an appetizer. He cannot be an entree. And he was an entree in the Buffalo offense in the playoffs. That's a failure at Bean's feet. And yet he gets a promotion. So, you know, windows, we always talk about windows. They usually aren't as open as long as they think they're going to be in the NFL. Because when you get good, players want more money. You lose coaches. You get rated. It's just hard to have that continuity. So I don't know if they have, you know, two or three more years. They have another year. I mean, eventually we're going to look at this team and they're going to be 6-11 one year. It's not going to be next season. But if it's going to happen for Buffalo, I would think it has to happen in the next 2 years.
Offensive line coach Aaron Cromer is retiring as well. And that offensive line has been probably the best thing this side of Josh Allen on that team these last few years. If you can give Brandon Bean credit, like he's built a good offensive line and kept continuity there, that's going to be threatened this year. So I certainly think as long as they have Josh Allen, they'll be the favorites to, they'll be a favorite to go to the playoffs every single year. You know, they'll be right there with New England, who's obviously, we're going to talk about them in just a little bit, competing back and forth for that division. But yeah, I really don't love what's happened for the Bills this morning, and it's to me just it is the roster, and I'm just curious if Brandon Bean, who like the height of hubris this offseason was him going on that radio interview and, you know, railing out the hosts for talking about the wide receiver position, and ultimately that is a huge reason why this team lost in the divisional round. Is again, yeah, I'm with you. Brandon Cooks, like I was absolutely wrong about that addition. He outkicked all of my expectations, but you're still throwing a Brandon Cooks trying to come back and win in a divisional round game. Like that's to me just it's a failure of the roster. Full stop there. And I wonder if Bean, especially after getting a promotion now, has the ability to look in the mirror and be like, I was wrong about that. And I wonder just again, the coaching candidates that they're going to talk to here. You mentioned Jesse Minter. I think Minter, obviously he's been interviewed by everybody that's had a head coaching opening so far, which by the way, 10 head coaching openings in the NFL this offseason. It is an outrageous time of turnover there. I just wonder if they do skew more towards offense here. That feels like the way they're going after, you know, letting go of McDermott, but we'll see. There's a lot of questions to be answered there, but let's talk about the game actually and keep going on the conversation with the Bills here. Again, Broncos 33, Bills 30. Let's put a pin in the Bills for a moment and talk about the Broncos here, who won this game and yet also probably feel pretty deflated coming out of the divisional round because they lost their quarterback, Bo Nix, to a broken ankle. And Jarrett Stidham is going to start in the AFC Championship game for the Denver Broncos. Nix is out for the season. Scott, I can't remember a bigger gut punch notification than getting this Bo Nix broken ankle notification as the Seahawks Niners were starting that game after the Bills and Broncos game came to a conclusion.
Yeah, starter Stidham, journeyman NFL quarterback, backup quarterback. He's 29 years old. He's only thrown 197 passes in his career. So now we can all make jokes like the Jared Stidham revenge game against the Patriots next week in the AFC Championship game. At least it's Sean Payton. At least this happened on a Saturday. You get the full practice week to try to get Stidham up to code. And it's not like Nix was having a great season anyway. I mean, a lot of Denver's success this year felt like it was in spite of Nix at times and not because of Nix. I thought the initial line of the AFC Championship game was a little bit of an overreaction. It sailed up to six, New England by six at Denver. And I'm like, you know, the Broncos still have a good roster. I still feel really good about Sean Payton's ability to get something out of a backup quarterback. I don't think the Broncos are drawing dead by any means. But, yeah, it's what the emotion of – it looks like Denver's going to lose on that Cooks play. It turns into an interception. They get the gift pass interference call that puts them, or I guess there are two calls that are questionable on the subsequent Denver possession. They win their game. Was it 90 minutes later? We find out Nix is out for the year. I can't compare this to anything, you know, where you win and you lose in the same moment. You haven't come down from the win yet. And then you're like, oh my God, you know, we're expected to lose next week on our home turf. But I just want to give Sean Payton the benefit of the doubt that I don't think Stidham is going to fall on his face. They may lose. I mean, oh, look, I challenge him to play worse than C.J. Stroud played last week, this past week, for one thing. I mean, maybe challenge accepted. And Drake May did not cover himself in glory either. We'll get to that game later. But so the bar has been lowered. But I don't think Denver's drawn dead. I'm just going to leave it with that because Stidham's been around. Payton's an offensive coach. They have a lot of different ways they can attack on offense. I think this is going to be a competitive AFC Championship game because I feel that way about Sean Payton.
Sean Payton has a lot of confidence in Jarrett Stidham for what it's worth. He was emphatic about that after the game. He's been very complimentary of Jarrett Stidham. And like last time we saw Jarrett Stidham play a game he started a few times like week 18 in 2024. He started a game there. So the big one for him was back when he was with the Raiders. He started week 17 and week 18 of the 2022 season. And, you know, he was aight. Right. He had some turnovers, but he threw three touchdowns in the game against the Niners in week 17 that year, week 18 against the Chiefs backups, probably, I'm assuming that was the Chiefs backups. I can't remember off the top of my head. But he, you know, 6.1 yards per attempt, one touchdown, one pick. So it's not exactly been great, but he hasn't fallen flat on his face so far when we have seen him. He's actually been really good in the preseason. We're showing some of the stats here from Steve Palazzolo, but Nate Tice has pointed this out, that he's been actually a really good player in the preseason for whatever that's worth. But I'm with you that I do think that Denver is by far not drawing dead here. It's unfortunate because I think this was a good Bo Nix game. It was a pretty solid, like, it was a lot of good moments for him against a defense that I thought he would struggle against. Wasn't perfect, but he kind of did the Bo Nix thing, which is sort of also the Caleb Williams thing, where he just really turns it on in the fourth quarter and is good there. But man, I mean, I thought it's just an unfortunate ending for Bo Nix and for the Denver Broncos, but I don't think they're drawing dead here, because Scott, to me, the theme of this postseason is, I said this last night, you are finding out which analysts you follow are into football or they're into the reality show called quarterback. Like, there are some really, really good teams, including the Denver Broncos, this postseason, that just don't have these marquee quarterbacks, you know, necessarily, right? Even when Bo Nix is out there, you mentioned he's a good starting quarterback, but he's not Josh Allen. He's not Patrick Mahomes. Who cares? These games are still delightful to watch with some of these really well-built teams, and Denver is certainly one of them.
Yeah. I want to know if anybody hit a same-game parlay on the touchdown catches in this game, where Keon Coleman, Mecole Hardman, Marvin Mims, Lil Jordan Humphrey and Frank Crum had touchdowns. You could have gotten a Kincaid for sure. But the other five guys, I don't know where that came from. Just one more thing about Stidham. 3 years in the program. This is not somebody off the street. This is not somebody who they signed a month ago. This is somebody who's been in the meetings, in the practices, knows the system. They know him. So, again, with a full week to prepare, I think he's going to be fine. He's not Bo Nix. New England should be favored. Maybe not as heavily favored as they are, but I'm going to rely on that. How are we going to draft Allen and Nix next year? And so it was not a good year for vanity quarterback, but Allen paid off because he still had all those rushing TDs. And of course, he's Josh Allen. He did just fine throwing the ball despite ordinary receivers. He's 30 next year. Obviously, we have to temper everything to what they do in free agency. How do they draft? Do they add some pieces? Do we like the new voice of the offense and all that stuff? But I'm curious if you're going to not be interested in vanity quarterback, which might just be Josh Allen next year. And after Nix has this injury, he took a step back this season. So he's kind of a tricky guy to draft. We did so well this year drafting on a budget. If you waited, you know, you landed on Trevor Lawrence. Drake May was a sleeper, but he was never that expensive. There's too many good quarterbacks in the league right now that, to me, I'm just always going to be a wave behind the pack. How do you think you're going to be approaching it next year, and specifically with Allen and Nix here?
Yeah, I've typically the last few years kind of leaned into some of these vanity quarterbacks, to use your phrase, but I do think this is the year to zag a little bit there and go back to some of the late round quarterback stuff, especially because I think hitting on high end wide receiver ones is more important than ever, because the wide receiver two position has kind of become very flat, and like that goes forever and ever and ever. Like, viable wide receiver two candidates are deeper than ever, but that makes elite wide receiver ones much more valuable. The running back position has really, you know, come back in force as the dominating position in fantasy football. So I just think, really, from an opportunity cost standpoint, I'm going to take my risks and try to find quarterbacks later on and try to lock in those spots. But a lot of it, specifically with Allen, does come down to, Scott, like, what is going to happen now with this coaching staff? What is going to happen with the players around Josh Allen? Because I don't know. I think you have to criticize Allen for his performance in this game, especially the play before the half. Like, I don't really know what they were trying to accomplish from a operations standpoint at the end of the half there. Like, you didn't have timeouts. What were you really hoping to accomplish? But he made a bad situation worse there, you know, and that's what happens with these quarterbacks. Like, you get all the glory, too much of the glory, in my opinion. You also have to wear some of the criticism. So there's no question we got to criticize Allen for a lot of his mistakes in this game, because they're not at the point where they have to rely on a Brandon Cooks catch, not catch, if he doesn't turn the football over. Like, that just is what it is. But obviously the entire focus of this offseason has to be stabilizing the offense, making that better. It has to be priority number one. Who is that coach, and who are the players around him? That will be big in determining whether Buffalo can get back to this moment, and if Josh Allen can be the QB1 running away once again.
What are the odds of Josh Allen getting to a Super Bowl in his career? Is it better than 50-50? Is it 50-50? Is it worse than 50-50? How do you feel on that?
How can it not be worse than 50-50? I mean, it just, it's really hard to do it, you know? It's really hard to do it. I think that part of the reason that the reaction from Buffalo was so distraught, and I mean, people that were close to the team were seeing this. You know, you saw the video of Josh Allen emotional in tears at the podium. Mm-hmm. I think McDermott, I don't love this, by the way, but you know, McDermott like calling reporters from the team plane, apparently still complaining about the Brandon Cooks call. Like, that to me is just, again, you can feel however you want to feel about that call, but that's not the reason you lost that game. You know, there were other things along the way that happened. That to me, just, it felt like a team that, right or wrong, really believed this was the opportunity to do it because they didn't have to go through Kansas City. You know, Lamar Jackson's not in the playoffs, all that stuff. Like, I think mm-hmm. this season will haunt them in a way and probably is a big reason why, again, right or wrong, McDermott was fired this morning. It can absolutely happen, but Scott, it's just tough, man. Like, it's tough to come down to this moment and end in similar fashion every single season, don't you think?
Yeah, it felt like this was the window, as you said. No Mahomes, no Burrow, no Lamar Jackson. All those teams should be better next year. You have May on the upswing now. You have Trevor Lawrence on the upswing right now. Denver has been a playoff team back-to-back seasons, so that, you know, the Chargers with Justin Herbert always have a chance. They have a lot of things to fix, but they have a good infrastructure there with the coaching quarterback. So a lot of good AFC teams going on. And man, I just, you know, I feel for, I'm a Patriots fan, obviously, but I don't have any dislike or, you know, negative feelings towards Buffalo. I think there's a lot of really good people in the area. Obviously, Justin Boone, our colleague, is a big Bills fan. I think they're a reasonable fan base. I hate to see a team. They remind me a little bit of like what the Cleveland Browns were a generation ago, where all of their losses had nicknames and everything. And it's like, you know, you'd like to see the Browns get a break one time. And I feel like this Buffalo Bills organization, you know, the Gabe Davis game that they lost in Kansas City in 13 seconds, how does that happen? This game had a lot of just crazy, we'll be rewatching and replaying this game in our minds for years. They've had really unusual losses in the playoffs. And I'd like to see once it goes Buffalo's way, because I think they deserve a championship one of these years. And also just to get to four straight Super Bowls is an incredible accomplishment, which they did in the Jim Kelly, Marv Levy years. And it's the way some people talk about that team, like it's a joke. You know, I don't subscribe to that at all. That's an incredible accomplishment to do that. And I think McDermott should hold his head high. Josh Allen should hold his head high, even as they strive for something better.
Well, the Bills are betting that a change in head coach will be a big part of getting over that hump. We will see if that bet pays off over the next few years. Let's get to the second game that happened here on Saturday. And we'll be a little quicker with this one because, you know, it was a big blowout. Seattle 41, San Francisco 6 here. I will say, I loved watching this game, even though it was a blowout, because Scott, the Seahawks, how can you not, if you love football, how can you not love watching this Seattle Seahawks team? Obviously the defense, incredibly impressive, but one of the big stories on offense was Kenneth Walker, 19 carries, 116 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns. He was as explosive, very fresh, you know, cause was splitting those carries with Zach Charbonnet all season long. He was very fresh and he made that San Francisco 49ers defense pay. The Seahawks, what an impressive operation they've built.
Yeah. They had enough points to cover the game after the kickoff on the opening kickoff for the touchdown, 7 points, and San Francisco never got the 7. So game over. The Walker Charbonnet stuff stings me. Michael Salfino puts out this great playoff contest where you can use every player once. And it just warps your brain as you're trying to set the lineup. And I wanted to play one of the Seattle running backs. And of course, I played Zach Charbonnet and not Kenneth Walker. So now I get all the Walker teams just, you know, are waving by me as they zoom. Yeah, I had a great first week, but now I gave it all back because I had the wrong Seattle running back. I don't know how you could have landed on Walker that definitively, just the way it's run out this year. I thought, if anything, if I hadn't seen the game and saw the final score, I'd be like, oh, I bet they probably both came in. And no, it was not that way at all. It was the Kenneth Walker show. But we know definitively the best unit left in the playoffs is the Seattle defense. And we've been talking about, you know, for all the talk of, oh, Houston's defense is great and Denver's defense is great and blah, blah, blah. Seattle's defense has been the best all season. And to eat Kyle Shanahan's lunch twice in 3 weeks. And I know the Niners have ridiculous injuries on offense, and they're not the same team with George Kittle. And Jennings has been playing hurt. They got nothing from Ayuk this year. You know, McCaffrey is at a kind of an odd point of his career because he's not as efficient anymore, but he gets all kinds of usage. They weren't getting the best swing from the Niners, but to do this to a Kyle Shanahan team twice in 3 weeks is really impressive. And you know, Seattle deservedly is the overwhelming Super Bowl favorite. I mean, this game was never competitive, just like the 13-3 game was really never competitive. Just Seattle didn't score the way they should have in that game. And yet, all the competitors are thinking, well, Sam Darnold, he still led the NFL in turnovers. We still have a puncher's chance if bad Darnold shows up sometime in the next couple of games.
Yeah, that would be nice. It'd be nice if they could get themselves into a game script where that actually mattered. But the problem is you can't get a lead on this Seahawks defense right now. We'll see what obviously Rams in the NFC Championship game. That's going to be a fun game to break down. It's going to be a fun game to talk about. But my God, the way this Seahawks defense is designed is so perfectly able to squeeze on those routes over the middle of the field that the Shanahan McVay tree wants to specialize in. They want to major. That's the degree that they major in, right? That's a big part of it. They're also so tough stopping the run, putting you in non-advantageous down and distance situations. And also, like, they have such badass players too. I mean, Byron Murphy's a guy who's been incredible for them this year. Never even gets mentioned. Their former first round defensive tackle, Nicky Manwari, has been a great hit there. Witherspoon is awesome in the secondary. I mean, you could go down the list. Tank Lawrence has been incredible for them as an edge rusher. You can go down the list and, like, not only are they well coached, the well designed defense, but the players have played extremely well too. So yes, it is the best unit remaining in the playoffs. It was the best unit coming into this weekend was the Seattle defense. And the offense is just kind of a passenger right now. I don't know if we'll see that performance from Kenneth Walker again. Obviously, Zach Charbonnet getting hurt. And I don't know if you've seen an update on the injury there, but that's a big thing that we'll continue to discuss throughout the course of the offseason. But yeah, this Seahawks team is awesome. They're the team I picked to win the Super Bowl going into the playoffs, and I feel really good about that pick after this weekend. But I want to talk a little bit of Niners here before we go to the break. My reaction, Scott, is just like, you know, sometimes we do these big think pieces, right, about, oh, like, what happened, what this, that, and the other when it comes to a playoff loser. To me, I don't think any of that needs to happen here with the Niners. There's no big, like, smoking gun sort of thing here. It's just they ran out of rope for a team that was very banged up throughout the course of the season and was super banged up in this game. I mean, Ricky Pearsall comes back. Who knows how he can't possibly be fully healthy. Christian McCaffrey gets hurt in this game. The dance with the devil that he has apparently been doing all season as being the only Niner to not be hurt finally ran out of luck there. Just like that's where this team is right now, not to even mention the injuries on defense that they've been outperforming constantly this season under Robert Saleh. His guidance.
Right. No Kittle, of course, too. I mean, next year, McCaffrey's 30. Kittle's 33. Even Jennings is a sneaky 29. Remember, his emergence came late in his career.
Free agent, too.
Yeah, they're kind of at an inflection point. But we like Shanahan. We like Purdy. I thought Robert Saleh, actually, and I know it doesn't look like this because they just lost 41-6. Seattle had 281 total yards. This is not on the San Francisco defense. Saleh had a great game the previous week against Philadelphia. Just more fuel to the idea that when you can hire a failed head coach and get him back to his coordinator roots, I think so many times that's a win. Brian Flores, Robert Saleh, a couple of guys who have done that. Josh McDaniels in New England. Successful year for the Niners. The NFC West was the action division. It's no surprise that two of those teams have survived. And they're playing in the NFC Championship game, and the winner of that will be the favorite. I mean, right now, New England, despite being the heaviest favorite next week, is the third choice to win the Super Bowl. They're behind Seattle and the Rams. Whoever wins that game will be favored on Super Bowl Sunday. But successful year for the Niners. They have the quarterback right. They have the coach right. They need to have a year where they are just ordinary with injuries. You know, there's been a lot of speculation about why do the Niners get hurt. It's probably mostly bad luck. But to still be a playoff team with the laundry list of injuries they had, I mean, they have to be satisfied with what they did. They probably didn't have enough fuel left in the tank to get further than they did. So I think it's a win for everybody involved in the San Francisco infrastructure. And I talked about quarterbacks earlier with that previous game. I think Brock Purdy will be a great target for drafts next summer.
I agree with you. He was he was literally running for his life. What did he run like 400 miles? 400 miles. Geez, 400 yards behind the line of scrimmage was the stat from Next Gen Stats here. So he was literally running for his life in this game. I think Purdy has acquitted himself well to end the season. Obviously, Shanahan is the guy. You get head coach, you get quarterback right. You're feeling pretty good. They do have a lot of questions to answer in the offseason, as we'll monitor that. You know, does Robert Saleh get one of these head coaching jobs? Is he one and done with the San Francisco 49ers back as the DC? That's interesting to monitor, although they will, of course, get Fred Warner and Nick Bosa back next year. On the offense, a lot of questions to answer. I don't think they can do another, 400 plus opportunity season for Christian McCaffrey next year and expect him to have another strong season. You know, his rushing efficiency wasn't great to end the year. Ricky Pearsall, what does his health look like? Juwan Jennings is likely moving on in free agency, I would bet. George Kittle tore his Achilles in the playoffs. You have to imagine he is a long shot for week one. So it does sort of feel like, and obviously I don't think Brandon Ayuk is back on this roster next year. I'd be stunned. But it does feel like a little bit of a turn the page moment for the San Francisco 49ers offense, which they've kind of quietly been turning that page this offseason. This feels like a year where we actually really need to start looking towards the next era of 49ers football. But as Scott mentioned, good starting point is Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy. That's pretty good to go into the offseason. We are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we've got more games from the divisional round to discuss. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. It's time to continue our recap of the divisional round. Next game up here, we've got Patriots 28, Texans 16. This was an ugly football game from both offenses. Obviously, one in the Houston Texans, much more concerning. We will get to that. But first, let's talk about the Patriots here, Scott. Again, the difference, I think, between these two offenses is that it was not pretty for New England. Will Campbell had a long day going against Will Anderson on the other side of it, as you would kind of expect. They never quite found a lot of rhythm. There were turnovers, certainly from Drake May. Again, I think he had some moments where he kind of made bad situations worse. But unlike Houston, they did capitalize in big moments. The touchdown to Pop Douglas, the beautiful touchdown to Kayshon Booty in tight coverage from Derek Stingley, and the great touchdown reception to Stephon Diggs as well. Those moments were enough for them to get out of a pretty ugly football game in some rough weather up there in New England.
Yeah, it became pretty obvious that New England just had to not lose the game on offense, and they could probably win it on defense against C.J. Stroud and the mistake played in Texans. But you know, a lot of turnovers for May. You mentioned Campbell. He did have a great fumble recovery on one of the several Drake May fumbles, but he didn't have a great game. Anderson's just a hard matchup. We talked about the Texans. They just line up and do what they do. They're not exotic. You know who the four guys are coming. You usually can't block them consistently for 3 hours. I'm still amazed that Diggs, I wasn't sure what they were getting with Stephon Diggs, and unbelievable touchdown catch, and he's been a model teammate by all accounts, certainly a back nine player and coming off a major injury. I thought this team was playing one man light in the receiver game, and Diggs has been better than I expected. Kayshon Booty has been better than I expected, and maybe just a guy who was a late bloomer. He was at one point the number one receiver at LSU. His career got a little bit off track. He's talked about some personal problems that he's overcome, and he's become one of my favorite players. I still would like to see a superstar tied to, maybe A.J. Brown can find his way to New England in the offseason. We'll see what the Eagles do with that. But it wasn't a great May game. It was a snow game. It was a sloppy game. It was a turnover-plagued game. We've seen Stevenson become their primary back. He missed some of this game after getting poked in the eye, but he's become the player they trust more than Henderson. Henderson's still a good player, but Stevenson's their main guy and somebody who I feel will be a decent fantasy player as long as the Patriots are in the playoffs. This is a successful season no matter what. Now, if they don't beat Denver, it's going to be disappointing because they've had such a perfect run out with the Knicks injury. It's unfortunate that is. It's favorable for New England. But just getting New England back into playoff contention, into the playoffs, winning a playoff game, it was they're playing with house money right now. Even wasn't a pretty win. You would like everything to be a Picasso. Sometimes you have to paint by numbers. This was kind of a finger painting game, but Patriots aren't going to give it back.
No doubt. And I think the sort of reaction I've seen, you know, from the same people who have been yapping about the Patriots schedule all during the regular season is like, well, if they go to the Super Bowl, that means that they beat, you know, Herbert choking in the playoffs, CJ Stroud choking in the playoffs, and then Jarrett Stidham in the AFC Championship game. I'm like, guys, those are three of the best defenses in the NFL. The Chargers, mm-hmm. the Texans, and the Broncos next week. Like, again, let's not just focus on quarterbacks all the time, please. Come on. Like, those are three good teams throughout the course of the season, especially on the defensive side of the football. And this definitely was not a perfect game at all from Drake May, but he did have a couple incredible plays, and like, that's what you need. Like, you don't get style points for these wins. You just win and you keep it moving, and that's certainly what we got from this Patriots team. And their defense continues to be one of the more, I don't want to call it a surprise unit in the playoffs, but I think it just continues to sort of elevate itself from what it was during the regular season. Zach Kerr gets a lot of credit there. He was not supposed to be the DC this year. He has had to step in because of a cancer diagnosis for the original DC. Like, it's just been a very impressive performance overall for this Patriots defense. And they put the Texans offense in a bind, or I guess I'll throw it to you this way, Scott. Did the Patriots defense put the Texans offense in a bind, or did the Texans offense, specifically their quarterback, put themselves into a bind in this game?
Yeah, probably more the second thing, although, again, with the Patriots running well, Nico Collins doesn't play, and then Dalton Schultz, who was off, looks like he was going to have a monster game, he gets hurt in the first quarter and can't play after having two catches for 47 yards, so CJ Stroud is trying to make it work with all the rookies that have played sporadically for Houston this year. What's left of Christian Kirk? He was really good 2 weeks ago. He had a touchdown against New England, but wasn't really a factor in this game. Man, I struggle with Stroud, though. For a guy who seemed to do everything right his rookie year, and he's regressed since, his pocket awareness has become an issue. Takes too many sacks, takes too many negative plays. Again, it's hard to ask him to be the guy who wins the game for you when you don't have Nico Collins, and then Schultz may be their second most important player, and then he's off. And again, another guy, I played my fantasy lineups this week and he was off the table immediately. You hate to see that, but you know, the Patriots being fortunate there. But Stroud, you know, the Patriots, you know, this didn't feel like a 28-16 game. I mean, this was a one-score game most of the way. This was Houston hanging around most of the way. And then finally, just they could not sustain offense. They could not keep their hands on the ball. And the Patriots at that point just let Stevenson tend to drive the ship the rest of the way, which, you know, you realize that Houston was just never going to score twice again. But we have – I know I realize they're – look, Houston with quarterback, it's like, well, we need to get better than the guy we have. It's like, well, who are you going to replace him with, right? I mean, Houston won't have the draft capital to draft a quarterback early enough. They kind of have to live with another cycle of Stroud for a few more years. And I don't know, man. I mean, D'Amico Ryan's great coach. I love the defense. I just wish I felt better about their quarterback. And I'm not going to blame him completely for this loss because of the elements and because of the people who weren't available. And the Patriots defense has played well. They've been coached up. They're such a different team when Gonzalez and Milton Williams are healthy. But I wish I trusted CJ Stroud. I feel like it's been a couple of years since I did.
Yeah, just to put in context how bad this performance was from CJ Stroud, there have been 429 quarterback starting games in the NFL playoffs since 2007. CJ Stroud's EPA per dropback was 418th out of those 429 quarterbacks. Like, it's brutal. It's brutal. 10th lowest EPA per dropback for a starting quarterback in a playoff game since 2007. I mean, I tweeted the list out. If you look at the list, the most painful part for Texans fans is that he is one of three Texans starting quarterbacks on the list. Brock Osweiler is also on the list. Brian Hoyer in 2015 is also in this bottom 10. Jake Delhomme's famous meltdown against the Arizona Cardinals is on the list. Drew Brees' final playoff game is on the list. Aaron Rodgers' potential final game from just last week with the Pittsburgh Steelers against this Texans team, also on the list. Peyton Manning's Super Bowl win with the Denver Broncos is on this list, by the way, which is just an outrageous thing to have happen here. The Texans also have the Justin Herbert game from last playoffs also is on this list as well. So it's not like there's some bad company, but there's also some great company, depending on how you want to view some of these guys at the current point in their career. Rodgers' final game, Brees' final game, obviously not so great there. But yeah, pretty brutal it was a horrendous showing from Stroud. We asked you guys in the YouTube chat during the break if you would sign CJ Stroud long term. I'm shocked that 53% of people said yes, because to me, I don't think you give up on Stroud. I think benching him in that game would have been nonsensical. That doesn't make any sense to me. But at this point, you just are kind of taking it year by year with him. You pick up his fifth year option because it's a good bargain at the quarterback position from a salary standpoint. But you're basically saying, like, I think Aikman said it really well at the end of this game, Scott, where he said he has regressed from his rookie year. I'm lightly paraphrasing. He has regressed from the player he was in his rookie season when he was legitimately very, very good. He's gotten worse every single year since then, and they need to figure out why. Point blank, period. They've got to figure out why, even with the context of the injuries in this game, you know, with no Nico Collins, obviously that's huge. It just, they've never been able to recapture what he was in his rookie season. And that is priority number one for the franchise at this point, because otherwise you're wasting an unbelievable defense right now. And we know that defensive windows don't stay open very long, regardless if you have D'Amico Ryans or not.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the lessons of DVOA is that offense has a lot more continuity year over year than defense does, even when you have Ryans and you have some of the talent. Stingley and Anderson and some of the stars the Texans have. I realize nobody really put a lot on tape or flash this year, but Houston took swings in the draft at receiver. In your charting, in some of the work that you do, some of the deeper detailed research and analysis that you do at receiver, do you see optimism? Is there somebody in this receiving group that you think is going to be a nice sleeper, maybe a second-year breakout in Houston?
I think both Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll are good players in isolation. Neither is a complete player. I preferred Knoll as a prospect, but I think Higgins is a guy who probably has more like ability to be on the field and in two receiver sets and the whole deal. I think it's kind of, I can kind of go both ways on Jalen Knoll not playing at all this year, because he does truly play the same position as Christian Kirk, and Kirk was good in the playoffs. Like, it's not a guy you think you could just take off the field, right? But how much faith do you have in this operation in fantasy next year? I think is a bigger question than your opinion on the receiver's talent. And like I said, I think Higgins does some things well. He doesn't separate down the football field. I mean, I knew they were drawn dead without Nico Collins against this secondary. That was always going to be a problem. But like, again, we keep coming back to this. Stroud made a bad situation way worse on Sunday. And with that in mind, like, how much faith do you have in this operation from a fantasy standpoint in 2026 overall?
I mean, they go to the playoffs three straight years. The last 2 years, 22nd offensive yards, 18th in offensive yards. That got their offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick fired. Nick Cayley took over this year. And so much of it is Collins, of course. He's the Jenga piece. They're a different team when he's on the field, truly. A different team when he isn't. It feels like he was only healthy for a handful of games. I realize he played, I think, 15 games this year, but some of those were partials. Some of those, he was on the injury report the whole week. He wasn't practicing, stuff like that. I feel like Nico Collins wasn't able to spread his wings this year. He's still, what is he, just 27, I want to say? Yeah, 27 next year. Yeah, so
something like that.
I would like to think the best is yet to come. He's still got like a 1,500, 14 touchdown season coming. It hasn't happened yet. He hasn't even got to double-digit touchdowns yet, but a lot of that has been health. You can't survive this way. You can't have your defense have to hold up its end of the bargain the way Houston has done it the last few years. Eventually, you have to have an offense that's better than average. You're not going to make the playoffs, especially next year with so many programs that were down this year you would think would come back. So I wouldn't be surprised if Houston missed the playoffs next year. They're gonna have to have improvement on offense. It's going to have to be a step forward for Stroud. And I think they need Nico Collins healthy for a full season.
They definitely have. That's been a problem for Nico. I love Nico, but you got to admit that staying healthy, like one thing or another, has been a problem here. Obviously, he misses this past game with a concussion, not his first concussion this season. That's a big problem. That's a problem. I don't know what you do about that, because he is so clearly the centerpiece of the offense. He's the best player on the offense. He needs to I think that they have not done a good job this year, especially in weaponizing Nico Collins. It's basically just all go out at X receiver and run a very old school route tree. We don't do a lot of motion to get him open there. What teams are doing with their number one wide receivers these days versus what Houston's doing for Nico Collins, it's very stark. But That's a little bit of a problem when you kind of get these other guys in the receiver room who need role catering too, and Nico's so good at X receiver, and I just don't think that Nick Caley showed himself to be capable of weaponizing a number one receiver in that way. This was a very, very traditional kind of Patriot-style offense, and I don't think Stroud was abysmal all season long, but he's going to be judged pretty heavily on this playoff performance, especially because he, no question, even if he wasn't abysmal all season long, he has not gotten better. He has regressed from that rookie year. Progression is not linear, but it also isn't supposed to go downwards consistently, which is what it has. And it just, like, in hindsight, Scott, it does feel like they sort of caught fire in that rookie year with Stroud playing well, but also Tank Dell on outbreakers, Nico Collins on inbreakers, and kind of just running the Shanahan greatest hits with Bobby Slowick. The farther we get away from that, the more that feels like, wow, they just ran hot in a really specific way, and I don't know if they're ever going to get back to that. But it requires a lot of changes in the offseason for sure.
It also would have been nice to see Woody Marks show something in his final game of his rookie year, 14 carries, 17 yards, had a couple of catches, so a big step back after he looked so good in the Pittsburgh win.
Yeah, it would be nice if they had like a good running game once in CJ Stroud's career, which they haven't really had from a success rate standpoint. So that's yet another thing I think they have to identify in the offseason. Long list of things to do in the offseason for the Houston Texans after a really disappointing way for their season to end here in the divisional round. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we will recap the final game of the divisional round, the Rams and the Bears. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Final game to talk about from the divisional round. Rams 20, Bears 17. Scott, the Rams win this game. Kind of feel like they got away with one here in a very weird way, because the Bears, of course, came rolling back at the end. They take this game to overtime. And I would posit it to you this way, Scott. I do not think that this was Sean McVay's best game. Like, I actually was pretty bothered by especially the first half, the play calling, very weird here. I think he got out coached by Dennis Allen, who, you know, just blitzed the hell out of this team and was able to find some holes there in their passing game. They ran out in 11 personnel, just a ton in the first half. They kind of ignored the run game, even though they had an advantage there. But again, all that matters is they win this game. They move on to face the Seahawks for the third time this year in the NFC Championship.
Yeah, it wasn't a great game for the Rams at all. I mean, the two MVP candidates did not play well in this weekend, but they're both advancing. Matthew Stafford just 6 yards per attempt, no touchdown passes, basically just about nothing from Devontae Adams until that really big reception in overtime.
Oh, that was sick, though.
Puka's great, but you hold Puka to 5 for 56. I realize he had a big rushing conversion for a first down, but you know, the Bears would have taken that up front. So they need to play a lot better next week against the NFL's best defense and maybe just best unit in the Seattle defense is the best unit in football this year. And I'm thrilled that we're getting that game, that rematch. But sad that we're going to say goodbye to the Bears. What a season they've had. This has been so entertaining. Their games have been wonderful to watch. Interesting to see Kyren Williams become, when push came to shove, it was him who got the 25 touches. And Corum only had a handful of carries in that one big third down play. I think the Rams kind of outsmarted themselves in that third down carry to Corum when they just should have maybe been more straight ahead. They lost yardage. They couldn't even go for it on fourth down. I didn't think it was a great McVay game. We've also talked about the Rams haven't been a good special teams club all season. We were worried that maybe that would be their downfall. They escape. And escape is what the word I would use. I feel like the Rams escaped in this game. The Bears had a decided edge. What is it? 417 to 340 yards, so that's a big edge there. Our yards per play, 5.1 for Chicago, 4.4 for the Rams. Usually when you hold those advantages, you're going to win. Of course, Chicago had three turnovers. The Rams didn't have any. You lose that turnover battle, you're usually going to lose. But I feel like the Rams play like their C-minus game and got away with it.
No doubt. I feel the same way from the Rams' perspective. I think both secondaries actually played much better than I expected in this game. I think the weather obviously could have played a part of that, but the Bears secondary was very, in terms of, again, the blitzes was really impressive. Kyler Gordon played a great game in this one. He really deserves a shout out on the Bears defense there. And on the Bears offense, like, again, I do think Omar Spate, some of these guys on the Rams defense, definitely outkicked expectations here. Cam Curl had a great game for them, but just final notes on the Bears. It was a great season, right? 2025 mm-hmm. has to go down as an awesome season. If you're a Bears fan, you're gonna look back on some of the plays in this game and be like, oh, you know, the Odunze drop on the first drive. I think that's gonna haunt you. That could have been a touchdown. The final game, the final play for the Bears here, in terms of the Caleb Williams interception. I'm not sure it was a great ball, anyways. But DJ Moore's kind of loafing on that route. Maybe loafing is too hard, but he certainly was not running full speed on the concept that is supposed to go to him on that dagger play. That's mm-hmm. gonna haunt you if you're a Bears fan. You're going to look back on this and be like, damn, was that our best shot? Because Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson's former boss, is famous for saying this. Like, you think you're going to be back here, but you don't know that you're going to be back here. It's going to be hard to get back to this spot here. And the Lions have been proof positive of that. So I guess my question to you, Scott, is, are the Bears going to go down as one of those teams like the Commanders last year who were in the NFC Championship game, got blown out by the Eagles, and then seriously regressed the next year? Or do you have more faith in this operation being more sustainable?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the comp certainly applies. You have a breakthrough quarterback. You have a team that wins a bunch of close games. They pull games, you know, out of nowhere. Seven or eight times they won games where they were trailing at the two-minute warning. I mean, it's just a ridiculous stat. That stuff doesn't repeat year over year, and the Bears outkicked their Pythagorean, their point differential, by two wins. That stuff tends to regress. They were only 16th in DVOA. But the one thing they have that the Commanders don't, the Commanders built their team, one of the oldest rosters, like 15, 16 years, right? I mean, that build never made sense. There's much more ascending talent with Chicago. Yep. I also feel better about Ben Johnson. Dan Quinn's not a bad coach, but I think Ben Johnson might be like a significant right answer. So you have that, and just some of the guys who are going to get better, right? We saw Colston Loveland. It wasn't his best game against the Rams. We should also point out, by the way, only four enforced penalties in this game. So they were letting the defenses get away with some stuff. And that's always going to be, when you see a game that is officiated that way, kind of hands off, I always feel like that favors the defense. I'm fine with it. I don't have a problem with it competitively, but sure, maybe that held the offenses down efficiency-wise, along with the weather and when the game was played. Because of Ben Johnson, because of players like Loveland, I realize Luther Burden still made rookie mistakes, and a lot of times he and Williams weren't on the same page, but he's going to be a better player. Caleb cleaned up his sack problem from his rookie year, and even though he would make frustrating throws at times, I mean, I'm never going to forget that throw he made to Cole Kmet to tie this game, and he's just done that all year. I mean, Green Bay is going to see Caleb Williams in their sleep all offseason, just some of the four or five throws that he made against them to bail out games. So I think the Bears are going to be fun next year, competitive next year. The only problem is that Green Bay pretty much makes the playoffs every year. Detroit still has a ton of talent on their roster. And when we last saw Minnesota, they were winning a bunch of games in a row with a really good defense. If they get anything adequate at quarterback, they're set up to be a good team again. So this is probably the second best division in football this year. The NFC West would be the first, but NFC North not that far behind. And next year, I don't see anybody having bottom out risk. Everybody's at least is going to be, you know, 7-10, 8-9, 9-8 competitive. I think every team will have a story they can tell about potentially winning the division. So Chicago could maybe play as well efficiency wise as they did this year and still wind up as like an 8-9 team next year, just because you're in the wrong division. But bottom line, we weren't really sure what Caleb Williams would be after year one. He looks like a right answer. Ben Johnson's a right answer. We're all going to be elbowing each other out of the way for Colston Loveland next year. And you would think they can improve a defense that, for the most part, did not play well in 2025. The arrow points up, but they're just in a division where it's going to be hard to maybe separate from other good teams.
I think that's really well said, and I agree with you overall that the difference between this Commanders team last year and the Bears team this year is the youth and the hopeful ascending talent here, because that's just not something that the Commanders bet on. In addition to the fact that Ben Johnson is the play calling offensive, you know, head coach, that is a huge difference maker between the Commanders. And like, I just think straight up, like, Ben Johnson's a way better coach, offensive coach, than Cliff Kingsbury is, even though Kingsbury had some moments for Washington as the offensive coordinator. There is more stability here for the Bears because of that, and because of the youth. Like, I think the hope, if you're the Bears, is that you are an 11 or a 10 win team next year, but you're better, you're more consistent, because any of these teams that have the late game heroics, the fourth quarter, all of that, you're going to be rife for regression. But you're hoping that Caleb Williams, who's clearly good and talented, but is not a complete picture yet. He's a volatile player. Anybody, you know, look at his just playoff stats overall. And some of the highlight moments, I joked about this, that they make you want to make the joke like, oh, but his completion percentage. But some of those things still have to get better. They can get better. It's not a lock, but they can get better in year two of the system. Colson Loveland can be better. Roma Dunze can be healthier and better. Luther Burden, who, it's funny, I was joking with Ian Harditz this morning. Nobody's going to mention the fact when there's 150 yards per route run tweets about Luther Burden. Nobody's going to bring up his 1.05 yards per route run from the postseason. But that also just indicates, again, there's room to grow for him. Kyle Manungai is a rookie who can get better. The only real area of age on the offensive line is Joe Tooney, who's an older guard that they kicked out to tackle. They need to figure out that left tackle position because Ozzie Trapillo tore his patella tendon in the playoffs. Other than that, though, this should still be an upward trajectory team on offense, and one, Scott, that I will be absolutely happy, willing, and excited to invest in fantasy in 2026.
Yeah, I think I'll have some Caleb Williams shares too. Dynamic as a runner, and just, you know, all last year it's like, oh my god, they took the wrong quarterback. They should have taken Daniels. Maybe they should have taken Drake May. At least now they can feel good about the guy they have.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, he's not a complete picture. He's not perfect yet, but the highs are so high. The lows are lows. What you're just hoping is that evens out a little bit. You know, you get somewhere in the middle there for Caleb Williams. And if you do, my God, what an exciting picture that is going to be for this offense and this team going forward. Scott, hell of a recap, buddy. This was absolutely awesome to talk a little ball with you. And again, shout out to your Patriots, man. AFC championship game in your wildest dreams, as you were bold predicting in Las Vegas in August. Did you possibly see this coming?
I thought they'd make the playoffs and maybe win one game. They've had a lot of favorable breaks. They don't have to play Josh Allen. They got CJ Stroud in round two. They got a banged up Chargers team in round one, and now they're getting Jared Stidham in round three. I am not by any means looking past Denver, and that's a very difficult place to play. Patriots fans know that Denver's been a house of horrors for the Patriots over the years, but house money, man. You know, and just to put a pin on this, all this, I mean, Mike Vrabel on the Patriots, Ben Johnson on the Bears, Liam Cohen on the Jaguars, you know, Peyton getting the Denver job a few years ago, the job Mike McDonald has done in Seattle. It's just so nice to see pieces landing, things fit. So much will go wrong in the NFL. A lot of people will say, well, there's more failure in the league than there is success. But it's just nice to see the right people in charge of some of these teams and some of the comebacks we've had and the fun seasons we've had. And it's a lot of it is because, you know, Gerard Mayo is a nice guy. Shouldn't have been a head coach, right? Over his head. The Bears, you know, kind of failed Caleb Williams his rookie year. Now they have the right guy in charge. So just a lot of teams seem to be making good decisions. Now, of course, there's just a quarter of the league is trying to replace their coach anyway. Yeah, so we'll see what choices they make. But, you know, because it's a zero-sum game. If somebody wins, somebody has to lose. But it's just fun to see some of these teams landing on right answers. And I hope we see a lot more of those right answers in 2026.
No doubt. There's a reason all these head coaching jobs are open. I think it's a big reaction to what we've seen this year. We're going to continue to talk about the playoffs. We're going to continue to talk about the coaches all throughout the course of this week. But that is going to do it for today's show. On Wednesday, Justin Boone and I will be back talking dynasty trade value rankings and your biggest dynasty debates. Remember, Fantasy Mailbag, yahoosports.com, if you want to get some of those read on the show. That's going to be live on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on this YouTube channel. Until then, we are out.